Welcome to the Big Lens Fast Shutter Podcast.
You cannot be serious! That ball was on the line!
And ladies and gentlemen, Elvis has just left the building.
Konnichiwa.
Shalom. This is Matt Cohen.
Welcome to Big Lens Fast Shutter, where we demystify the world of sports photography.
Here at News, both Ryu and I will tell you our best and worst shoots of the previous month, and we talk about ourselves, because Ryu is an egomaniac.
And indeed he is. I guess we can actually talk about this month. But as Matt and I, we've just discussed what we've gone through this month, and Matt has a lot of things he'd like to talk to you about, but, you know, him being such a personable and sharing kind of guy who likes to give a lot, he's not going to actually tell you anything. And I like to tell you a lot more stuff about Matt, but he said I can't, so I'm going to talk about myself. And this month, I don't have a best shoot. I just kind of like looked at what I've actually shot this month so far, and all of them are a bit shitty. The absolute worst was on the 19th of October, which is Olympique Marseille versus Arsenal. By far the worst shoot of the month. And, well, for this season, because the match was so boring. And to compound the really, really bad, well, this entirely horrible, horrible day, I was staying at a friend's place, this guy that I actually met on Twitter, big, 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 big Marseille fan. And Marseille lost in the 92nd minute. So basically the time was up and Arsenal scored and there goes. And obviously I tried to actually joke to him about on the way back to his place, because I was staying at his place, about how, you know, Marseille being, that was this being a really terrible match and everything. But obviously we didn't really find it very, very funny. So Guillaume, I'm really sorry that you guys lost, but it was a really, really bad match, and I'm sure you guys will qualify for the knockout stage of Champions League. I might have a good shoot coming up this weekend, because I'm going to go shoot, well, hopefully, Inter Milan versus Juventus, which is called the Italian Derby, but I might not. So, that being said, what's up with you, Matt Cohen?
Well, before I get to my news, I'd like to commiserate with Guillaume about Ryu's attempts at humor at the wrong times and it not being really all that funny. I can relate
because
to that.
I'm funny all the time.
On to my October, which has been a pretty good month, actually. A bunch of good football games. My favorite, I'm going to pick two. The Patriots came to play the Raiders early in the month, and then the Chiefs were here. October in California, really good light, even at midday. So I was able to do a lot of things that I don't ordinarily get to do, just kind of sit on little pockets of light and position myself where I think there's going to be good light and then wait for a play to come to there. And I've gotten really lucky.
I thought you were sitting
times.
In those lights and getting a tan? No?
Well, I was doing that during TV timeouts.
American people, I tell you.
Couple minutes at a time is, you know, really all it takes for me to get golden brown. But yeah, both of those were very good games. Good weather. Last year, this time, it was pouring rain for every football game I shot. So it's really nice to have warm, sunny days to shoot in. So yeah, the Raiders lost both of those games, but I had good games shooting. So those
this
are my
is
best shoots.
New vocal.
And then, my worst shoot wasn't really even all that bad. It's hockey season now, so I'm shooting the San Jose Sharks. And the first game I shot was about 10 days ago, and it was quite difficult to get back into the swing of shooting hockey, which I hadn't shot for, I don't know, 7 or 8 months. And one of the peculiarities of shooting hockey is that on the ice, you get to shoot through holes that are cut in the glass that are just big enough for a 70 to 200. And you can get some good shots from down there, but those are limited because for every one of those that they have, that's one less paying seat that they can have. Over the course of a season, that's a lot of money. So there aren't that many of them, and the Sharks, I guess, predictably took one away, so there's one less than there were last year. So now that means a lot more standing up in the seats and shooting down on the ice with a 400, which you can do, but it's a lot tougher to get very interesting pictures. You can cover the game up there, but you can't really get, you know, the emotion of it. You can't get, you know, the sweat flying off of their faces. It's good for fights, but it's, you know, just average for everything else. But it took me that game to get my timing back.
I think it's, I'm shooting, you know, figure skating next month. Now, it's probably the same thing, isn't it? Like, you get to shoot from the ice level or from the top, right? And you can shoot from the top, but it's not that interesting. Kind of same thing?
Yeah, it's kind of the same thing. And, you know, because there are less spots, it's more of a rotation thing. So I'll go down there and shoot one period from the ice and then the other two from up top and, you know, just try and get some variety out of it. But, you know, that's sometimes you're just not going to be able to get the position that you want, and you just have to make do with what's there.
But yeah, shooting from the top sucks, huh? In any sports. I'm not too crazy about it. You can shoot, like, you know, a couple, maybe like for 5 minutes, because that's
right
an interesting angle, but that's the only angle you get.
Yeah, you don't want to shoot the whole game.
No.
You don't want to look at your pictures after and say these pictures all look exactly the same. So I guess that's, you know, kind of a lesson we can work in there, you know, change it up, move around.
That's it?
Yeah, I think that's it.
Reintroduce is a section where we present a sports photographer or a person related to the sports photography business. And who do we have this month, Matt?
We have Kurt Rogers, who is the founder and designer at Think Tank Photo, and they make some of the best bags and accessories for photographers out there. I know that you and I both have pretty much a full selection of what they make.
We do. I think I've actually probably invested. If they're like Think Tank stock, I should probably buy them now.
That's right. You know? I think we should both get in on that.
I don't know, but we can actually ask Roger about that later on as well.
Yeah. Okay. So Kurt, I know you got started shooting, you were a daily news photographer, is that right?
Yeah, so I started out, working in smaller newspapers in the East Bay, the Livermore Independent, the Valley Times, the San Ramon Valley Times, the Contra Costa Times, and then I was stringing all over for the Singleton papers, which were the Argus and Hayward Daily Review and all that. And then I finally moved into, working at the Valley Times full time. And then I moved into working at the Examiner, San Francisco Examiner. And so I worked there for, quite a while. longer than I'd like to admit, almost 20 years at the Examiner in San Francisco. And then the Hearst Corporation bought the San Francisco Chronicle and merged the two papers. And I worked there for 7 more years. So altogether in that aspect, I was probably there for about 27 years. And it was all fun. It was great.
At some point, you decided you didn't want to do that anymore. And is that when you decided to start doing Think Tank?
Well, actually, Think Tank happened a lot earlier than that. I was friends with Doug Murdoch. Quite a while ago, maybe 20 years ago, I started making kind of inserts for trunks for professional photographers to run around and be able to throw your stuff into your trunk without it having to tumble around when you're driving, because working out of your car is a daily assignment photographer. I mean, there was just no way to pack everything up and move it. You just needed to just throw it in your trunk and go to the next thing as fast as possible. And I just needed to keep everything from tumbling around. So I started making these things and I started showing them around. And so that's how Doug and I became friends. And then we started, we were friends for, probably 10 or 12, 15 years before we even started thinking about Think Tank. And, once we decided to do that, we think tank came pretty quickly because I had kind of an idea, and he had an idea, and Mike Sturm had an idea, and my wife Deanne. We all had, you know, all these great ideas of where the there was kind of like a void in camera bags and things to, you know, carry your equipment and travel. And so we decided that we could fill this void with all these great ideas we had. And so then we just moved along on that. And it just kind of it happened pretty quickly.
So you guys all have different backgrounds. I know you've all shot a little bit of sports here and there. But when you're designing these bags, what is it about sports photography? Like, you know, some of your products are aimed towards sports shooters, some are towards more news shooters. But when you're doing a bag, what do you think about sports photography that goes into it?
Well, when we first started out, there was kind of this, Brad Mangin kind of coined it, and it's called it was the Holy Grail. And we needed to have a roller bag that we could put a 400-28 with a hood in the bag and carry it on an airplane, which for us, that was the ultimate as far as sports photography. I mean, we weren't even on the field yet, and we were thinking, oh my God, we need to have this bag so we can, you know, so we can actually not be separated from our equipment. You know, when you end up flying, it turned into a 2-year process to make this bag to be able. This was the airport security, by the way, where we finally made the bag that was able to carry this lens, and then you could just roll it in. Sports photographers are kind of different, and I'd say they're a different breed today than they were maybe even 5 or 6 years ago. Because everything is kind of fine-tuned today. Everybody knows exactly what they're going to, you know, bring to the game. They know exactly what they're going to shoot with. They have their kind of style down. They know how they're going to move their photographs. So everything's kind of a known. Back in when we first started this stuff, everything was changing so fast. Digital photography was changing. The way we were moving pictures was changing. Sometimes we'd shoot digital, and back in, you know, when it first started out digital, we'd still have to drive everything back to the office. Yeah. Because it would just, everything was too slow. You couldn't even get a line out of Candlestick. And so the Chronicle, we ended up putting our own line in there with our own modem and just so we could actually have access to something where we could move photographs.
Yeah, you still have to do that there, by the way.
Yeah, I bet you do. When the game is over now, I feel fine that I'm at home. But as far as rolling in with a bag, that was great. But then we still needed. Back in the film days, Doug and I, we collaborated on a whole bunch of different things. Little film drop bags so if I was on the sideline shooting, and at a football game, you could shoot 20 rolls of film easily. And so we just needed, a bag to carry that spent film in. And so we'd come up with that kind of stuff. And then once we started Think Tank, then we had, we had a million different ideas about how and what kind of sports photographers use different types of bags. Because as a sports photographer that did, baseball and hockey and football and pretty much every kind of sport you could throw at us, as a general assignment photographer for the Chronicle, you just kind of needed to go into every single situation. And so I ended up doing a lot of hockey and a lot of baseball. And baseball, I thought, was pretty much a pretty easy thing to shoot because, as far as carrying your equipment, you just basically roll down, you set up your camera on your monopod and another camera, and then you're pretty much fine. You can roam around a little bit, but football was a little bit harder where you needed to, run up and down the field. And so you had a 400-28 and, let's say, another, a 70-200 and then a wide-angle lens. The only other thing I needed to really carry would be, a 1-4 converter. But I actually wanted to put that in something, so we created a little kind of it's almost like a chalk bag that's really fuzzy in the inside, so I didn't have to put the caps back on the 1-4 converter, and I could just drop that in there and run back and forth in the field, and it wouldn't fly out. And so then I was started. We needed to, you know, I decided that I didn't want to carry three cameras. I wanted to carry two, and we wanted to put a 70-200 in another bag on the belt system. So we made something that would go into that, and then I could at the end of the game switch my 70-200 out for a wide. And run around with the 400-28 in one hand and the 70-200 and, you know, on my belt system, and then the wide angle in my in one hand, and basically run around, do Hail Marys of the coaches, you know, shaking hands, and, you know, the kind of the aftermath, the kind of stuff that you want to get, you know, where you don't want to leave your 400-28, you know, someplace where it's going to disappear.
So what would you say is the one must-have item for sports photographers? I'm going on your site right now. What, you know, I don't have anything at all. I'm just starting out. What should I be looking at?
I would find a modular component and in a camera belt to work together. And, you know, that would be the entry level. Or even, you know, you could, we have some belt packs that work really good for that kind of stuff. You could pretty much put batteries and all kinds. We have the Speed Demon, which is a small little belt pack that will carry, you know, a couple of lenses and then more batteries. And I don't know if you're, you know, I don't see a whole lot of people using filters other than neutral density. HDLSR videos these days, but that bag has a lot of other pockets where you can put business cards and notepad and a card wallet. There's various different things you could do with that bag, and it could last you years and years just shooting like that. And so today I feel like less is more, especially with shooting sports, because I don't want to be, bogged down with a lot of stuff. So I go with the minimal thing. So Speed Demon would be great. And it's pretty much an entry level, or a change up, which is almost along the same lines. It's just a little bit narrower. So it's got a little bit narrower profile.
I have to admit that I just bought the Speed Demon, the version 2 of it, so it should hopefully be here quite soon. I did. I'm not joking. I can even actually show you the receipt if you want to. You want me to prove that I actually bought it. Other thing is that I live in Paris and I shoot football, which is soccer, near country, and I travel a lot. And the Airport International just has been absolutely fantastic to me. So, and Matt and I were kind of, joking about it, but if you're going to make the version 3, can we actually get involved in it? Or is that something that you guys don't really do out here in Europe?
No, that is something that we do. We always like to hear from photographers. In fact, we have photographers all over the world give us feedback on our bags and what kind of things we need. And we actually have design meetings, and we have a design board where we have professional photographers who work on a daily basis, give us feedback about what we're doing and what we need to do and how we need to, what changes need to be made and that kind of thing. So it is a very two-way street with us as far as Think Tank goes and working with photographers.
So, you know, from your own experience, and I'm sure that the people who advise you know, these bags just get abused all the time. So what do you do knowing that these bags are going to be abused in the design process to make them more durable?
Well, first of all, we use the best materials we can possibly put into the bags. The YKK zippers and all of our ballistics are the best we can possibly get. So, if there's a problem, with any of the materials or the zippers or anything, we stand by our bags. And we'll make it right. So that is part of the process, though. I've had bags that are the first generation prototype bags that I still use today because I'm still trying to wear them out.
Right.
And it's funny because I'll go someplace and we've changed all the hardware and lots of different things on these bags over the years. to make them better looking or whatever. And so I still carry these bags around. And every time Doug will see me or somebody in the office will see this bag and they'll go, "What is that?" And I'm still carrying an old Urban Disguise. It's like one of the very first ones, one of the ones that we did as a prototype. And I have a prototype shapeshifter that I like to use. I'm just trying to wear it out, and I haven't worn it out yet. And it's funny because we do have a lot of photographers come in. In fact, I had lunch with Andy Kuno and Brad Mangin yesterday, and Brad came in to get a set of wheels put on his airport security because he's going to the World Series here next week. And, and his wheels were, I don't know how far he's gone. We should probably have a odometer on.
Yeah.
To see how far they've traveled. But, so the bag looks pretty beat up. And, I kind of like the look of the really beat up bag when it's right out of the car. Kind of looks it looks too new and too fresh, and kind of beat up my stuff a little bit more than anybody else, I think.
Yeah, if you guys think that Kurt is exaggerating about how much punishment these bags can take, let me set you straight on that, because I have an original Urban Disguise 40, I believe, and I have an original shapeshifter, and my airport security has seen probably not as many miles as Brad's has, but still quite a few, and I shoot a lot of rodeos, so on rougher ground than he goes on, and that stuff lasts. I mean, it's almost magic.
And I think I was actually quite surprised. I went to a match recently, and the guy who had because everyone in Europe has Airport International, but the security's too big, you can't actually put them on the airplane. So everyone has international, and they travel with that because that's the maximum they're allowed to carry on board for most airplanes. And I've never seen wheels like that on any Airport International with this one photographer. And he didn't know that there is a, exchange program for wheels, because I told him, why don't you contact Think Tank? They'll give you free wheels. And he's like, "What? Free wheels? Yeah. You can get free wheels." So yeah,
if the wheels die, we'll replace your wheels.
It's the best thing. I mean, because I actually don't drive, so I take trains and planes and buses everywhere. And I probably wear them out twice a year. So I get them replaced all the time. And that's probably the only part that's on the bag that really, gets, abused and beaten up on a regular basis. And the rest of the bag getting a bit dirty, but, it's still working. As it did the first day.
When I first got my airport security, I kept looking at it and thinking, is this really going to fit in the overhead bin? It looks like it's too big to fit in, but then when you actually, you can load it up with everything that you have and put it in there and it still fits. How do you guys design it so that it fits so perfectly in there? Do you have an actual overhead bin that you design it in, or do you just go by what the specs are?
No, we stuffed Doug into the overhead. And then, after the flight lands, we pull him out and he's got all the measurements down. Now the airlines pretty much have their dimensions, and we just kind of work with that. And it is kind of a nerve-wracking thing when you have all your equipment and you walk up to that line. I don't know if you're flying United or Southwest or whatever you're flying, and there's this crowd that's in front of you, and you've got this, you've got your whole life in one bag. And this bag is going to go on, and so your blood pressure starts rising and everything, and you get in there, and sure enough, it fit again, it fit coming out, and it fit went going back, and so it's always an illusion, but I always try to wiggle my way to the front of the line somehow, and now that I've been flying quite a bit, at least I've gotten to the point where now I'm in the front of the line instead of in back the line, but still, I've done a lot. I did some trips. I flew to India for the Chronicle a few years back, and I checked my clothes and I carried on my camera equipment in a Airport International, and my clothes never made it. They never made it, and so I think for like $25, I got a whole new wardrobe when I was there, which isn't bad, you know. And I keep thinking that, you know, it'd be really easy just to fly around and forget about your clothes and just buy new clothes everywhere you go, because all you need is one pair of pants and a shirt.
Except and, if you're going to Paris, I guess, right?
Yeah, well, at least there's plenty of shopping there, you know. You know, you get in the middle of some of these places, and there's not too much to do. But so putting the bags on the plane is part of it. And every time we fly, and Doug and I used to fly a lot together, and you know, we'd have this kind of routine. All right, I'm going to walk in, and you know, stuff the bag five different ways into the overhead, and so we'd shoot pictures of it, and to the point where the, you know, flight attendant would have to, you know, tell us to sit down and put our seatbelts on. Taxiing. I mean, we'd put the bag underneath the seat and up above, and we try to take over like one whole bend, you know, and make ourselves so obnoxious that people wouldn't even want to be near next to us. It was pretty funny. We do buckle testing on airplanes. I mean, I hit him in the head one time with a buckle that. We had a bet that the buckle we could pull this buckle in a certain way that and it could come off, and we were like, no, it can't. Yes, it can. No, it can't. And so I pulled this thing and smacked him right in the head with it. And so we ended up changing that design. So a lot of it is, you know, we use it.
So what does the future hold for Think Tank? It seems like there's always a new version or a totally different bag coming out. I don't know if you can get into what you're working on right now, but you can tell us, you know, what the general plans are.
Well, the general plan is to keep making bags that are you know, professional photographers and photographers that are you know, not as professional as some will want to use. It is kind of a, we built bags for the professional photographer, but most of the bags that are sold are to, prosumers, people who, you know, have a lot more money than you and I and can afford, a lot, better equipment. And a lot of our bags, are bought by that type of, person. But as far as the whatever's coming out new and things like that, we are always working on stuff that is going to be brand new. And I think we're going to show some stuff in New York and next week at Photo Plus. And so we're all excited. We never stop. And you know, there's so much. We have so many new things that we look at all the time that, you know, sometimes we get confused, you know, about really what, oh, okay. You know, and then trying to come up with names for these things is just, you know, we started out, you know, and decided that we didn't want to, like, you know, have the, you know, the version two, or we didn't want to, like, number the bags. You know, this would be the, you know, whatever, you know, people come up with numbers or we just wanted to name everything some crazy name. So we have these little competitions inside that we, you know, we kind of let everybody think of names for whatever the bag is going to be called. So that's how we do it.
Thank you, Kurt.
Sure.
For everything. I mean, it's been fantastic. And a lot of people, our listeners, use Think Tank stuff as well or are interested in it. And I think it's actually good that we got to listen to all the stories about putting people up in the compartment, everything as well. And thank you so much. And I hope, when you come up with something new, we can have you back on the show and you can talk about it as well.
Oh, there's new things coming down the pipe all the time. I appreciate being on your show, and if anybody's coming to Photo Plus in New York, come say hi to us at Think Tank, and we'll be around answering questions and showing off new stuff.
That's great. Thank you very much for everything, and that's it for the Think Tank Kurt Rogers interview. Thank you.
Thank you, Kurt.
Thanks, guys.
Big Lens Fast Shutter Masterclass. Where Ryu and Matt think they know best.
In Masterclass, we pick a topic in sports photography and discuss it from front to back. Today we're going to talk about shooting in the dark and different ways to make your pictures as good as they can possibly be under bad lighting situations.
I actually don't know. Like, is most football, like American football games, are they done during the day or during the evening?
No, the vast majority are done during the day. The only night games are Sunday night and Monday night. And then at the end of the season, they do some Thursday night. But football is mostly a day sport.
Okay. Huh. And baseball is also...
No.
Well, that's an evening
baseball
sport, isn't it? No.
Kind of the opposite. The only day games are on the weekends and then on the weekdays where the visiting team has to go back home. So they play the game in the day so that they can travel at night.
I guess the reason behind it is that baseball, well, you know, you have it during the week and not during weekends, and people have to get out of work to get there, right? Now, I think, it's the same thing for football in Europe as well. Like, usually when you have Champions League games or Europa League or anything like that actually happens between Monday to Friday, it's usually, you know, in the evening. But au contraire to American football is that here the matches are in the late afternoon, and football being a winter sport, it's really, really dark by the time it hits around 4 o'clock. So in my situation, it's always, 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 always dark. So that ends masterclass. Okay, no, definitely not. So what do you do? Is there any like specific thing that you are very, very conscious about when you're shooting in a low light situation? And I think you should quite add like the professional, you know, games as well as the high school ones, because I think that's the one that people probably want to know a bit more about.
Yeah, well, for football and baseball at the pro and college level, I don't really have to worry about low light very much because the stadiums here, even the older ones, have good enough lighting. The games I have to worry about are the MLS team here, the Earthquakes down in San Jose. Their stadium is not the best for lighting, and then obviously high school stuff. So I think a couple things to keep in mind when you're shooting in low light are: be really careful metering. And you might have a little bit of latitude if it's light, but if you're shooting at a pretty high ISO for whatever your camera is, then it's going to be a problem if you miss the exposure. Because if you try to correct it in post, you'll bring in a lot of noise or the colors will shift.
Oh.
If you take a little bit of extra time to get the exposure exactly right before, you'll get better results.
And how would you go about doing that then? How do you actually get the exposure right?
Well, I think it's really important to be mindful of your metering and to know that if you're shooting something and there's a lot of darkness in the background, the exposure is going to be largely influenced by that. Even if it's on center weighted or spot metering or whatever, it's still going to be adding to the exposure. And so I like to take that out. I like to, you know, when players are doing a warm up, I'll get a good tight shot of their face and then use the skin tone as the part of the exposure that I want to get right. And then everything else can be black because it's not important. You know, the backgrounds or whatever, I'm not worried about that. I just want to make sure that I'm getting the skin tones. So I will definitely always manual meter at night, just to get that right. And then,
so you're basically saying that the best way to do it is that during warm-ups, you'll shoot tight shots, and then from there, you can kind of like work your way into setting it manually what the correct exposure would be.
Yeah, that's what
I
do.
Is that what you're saying? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And then a couple other things. It depends on what kind of software you use in post-processing, but a lot of people use other software than what their camera maker puts out. So Ryu and I both shoot Nikon. If you shoot Nikon in RAW and process with non-Nikon post-processing software, it's not going to respect the noise reduction settings. So if you're shooting at the very, very edge of what your camera can do, whether it's 2000 ISO or if you have the big pro bodies, you know, 32 or 64, and you're not going to process with Nikon software, shoot in JPEG and use the use the noise reduction in the camera, and you'll get better results.
Really?
Yes.
Huh.
So, for instance, I use Aperture for post-processing.
Right.
And if you shoot raw in Nikon and you're shooting at very high ISO, the Aperture can't read what the noise reduction setting is. And so it applies its own noise reduction, which is never as good as what you're going to get from the camera or Nikon software. So right. the way around that is to shoot JPEG, let the in-camera noise reduction do the work, and then go from there. But again, when you're shooting JPEG, you need to be much more careful because you just don't have the latitude to change the exposure in post.
Okay.
So those are my tips: manual metering and manual settings, and then you know, if you're not using your camera maker's software, then shoot in JPEG and set the noise reduction up in the camera.
Okay. Well, you really have to know, like, what is the limit of ISO that you can use that produces a good file, so usable file. Every camera has got its limit. I mean, you know, limit, not the physical limit, but the usability limit. And you really should know if your camera can actually do up until 1600 relatively noise-free, then that should be your limit. And you should try whatever other way you can do to not go over it. So that means usually to, you know, lower the shutter speed. And that, hence, like, that's the problem when it comes to stadiums and indoor, outdoor. It doesn't really matter where you're going to be shooting. When it's very, very dark, you have to kind of sacrifice certain things. And if it gets to a point that you're shooting at a very, very low shutter speed, I mean, the only thing you can probably do is, like, use a flash, like Matt did on his post a couple weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, on the high school football thing. Other than that, I honestly don't really have much of a solution when it's very, very dark and there's no sufficient lighting. And if you can't use flash, I mean, you're beep, you know, you're fucked. And I guess that it.
Well, I have a couple things to add to that, and it's kind of the same advice that I give to people who are shooting with lenses that aren't long enough or gear that's not good enough. Do what you can do. So you're gonna shoot the game, you're there to get pictures, and you can shoot at 3200 on a camera that can really only go up to 1600, and you can shoot at a fast shutter speed when there's not enough light. You can do all those things, and you might be able to actually freeze the action and get what would have been a good picture or a usable picture if you had had better gear. But if you don't, you don't. So my advice in those situations, whether it's a too short of a lens or not enough light or anything like that, is do what you can do. And that means shoot things where the action isn't moving as fast. Shoot the sidelines. Shoot the huddles. Shoot, the players at the line of scrimmage. Shoot the goalie. Do headshots. Look for a motion when they're not moving fast enough. There are other things to shoot at a sporting contest than straight up action. And they're usually, those things aren't moving as fast as the action. So you can have a slower shutter speed and a slower ISO and a shorter lens, and you can still get all those things. And there's also, I guess, one thing we haven't talked about is shooting at night, especially if you're at a game where your gear is just not up to it. You know, we've all been there. We've all been in a situation where there's really just nothing you can do. You're shooting at a 200th of a second, and you're shooting at 2.8 or 4, whatever your maximum aperture is, and you're at the highest ISO you can get, and you're still struggling. Try panning shots.
I thought I was gonna say rob a bank. No, get a loan.
Well,
no,
that. Robbing banks is an option when you're not actually at the game. So you can't usually, if you're at the game and it's a night game and you rob a bank, you still have to wait until the stores open the next day to go and get the gear.
Your logic is killing me, but it's fine. Go ahead.
That's more of a long-term solution.
It's a long-term long-term investment. So what is it? You're not going to rob a bank, but what are you going to do? You're going to do panning shots, right?
Panning shots, yeah. That's so true. You know, you can drop your shutter down, you know, to a 15th of a second or 10th of a second, which means that you can drop your ISO way down back to the normal range. And in whatever sport, you're always going to be able to use a panning shot. And it's not a high percentage shot. You're not going to walk away from a game with a card full of panning shots that are going to be good. But like I said, do what you can do. And panning shots are something that you can do in low light. And it's good practice. And you can walk away with some really interesting pictures, especially if you practice a lot of it. And if you're not going to be getting peak action pictures, go for something else.
Because we just received on the Flickr blog post, this guy wanted to upgrade his lens from, I think his the maximum aperture for that one's like 3.5. And he was wondering like whether or not an F4, you know, 70-200 would do, or even 70-200 2.8. It's one of those things, like I know Matt hates to talk about equipment because, you know, he doesn't like to buy things, right? You don't like to buy things.
No.
No.
That's not...
Unless you're flowers, maybe, Matt? No? Not flowers? Maybe chocolates? No? Not those things?
No. It's not that I don't like to buy things. It's that I would rather be using the things that I have than thinking about buying more
things. Right, but flowers and chocolates are different things.
Yeah, that's okay, totally good. Different.
So it does kind of like, you have to really also think about, if you get to a point, you're going to be shooting a lot of pictures in very dark environments, whether or not you're going to upgrade the body or the lens. And I will forever vote for the lens first, because they
I don't think there's anybody that says camera over lens. You always want the best lens that you can have.
Yeah, but people get very excited about the body more than anything else.
Yeah, they're wrong.
they are. Yeah, it's just like that. No, you're wrong. If you think about the body more than the lens, you're wrong.
And, yeah, you are. I mean, there are still Nikon manual focus lenses that I have that are older than I am that I can still use.
And yeah, but not for sports when you need, you know, autofocus stuff.
Right, but I have, but the pro zooms, the pro zooms that I have, I've had since 2007, and they're still in great shape. My 400 is, you know, a previous version, so I don't even know how old it is, but several years. If you buy good lenses, the metal ones, they're going to last for a long time. And especially if you get a 2.8, that lens is not going to get any slower than that. And with each successive body that you get later, that lens is going to be faster than it was on the old body. So, buy the best lens that you can get at the time. And keep in mind that the better the lens is, the more you'll be able to sell it for when it's time to sell it. I know that the 400 that I have, I could sell it today for exactly what I paid for it 3.5 years ago. Yeah. That's just how those lenses hold their value. So, you know, if the difference between, you know, variable aperture zoom is significantly less than what a 70-200 would be, that's one thing, but you're still going to be able to sell that 70-200 for a lot of money, and you're not going to be able to sell the variable aperture lens for very much at all.
Well, what kind of aperture was it? Variable what?
Variable aperture.
And that's exactly it. I think you use your stock lens to a point that you realize, okay, well, this is not something I can use in low light sports photography. And whether or not you're going to then step it up to F4 70-200 or to 2.8 70-200, I think whatever it takes, I would even wait longer to get the 2.8. Because when you get the F4, it might actually be slightly bit more useful than your stock 55-300mm, 3.5 to whatever, 4.6, or, you know, one of those things. But at the end of the day, you're going to, you know, tell yourself like, wow, I should have just waited a bit more, you know, spend more money and got the other one. Because I think you will always, always, always regret it. And unfortunately, these things are not very, very cheap. But as Matt said, that you can actually go and get the generation that was, you know, the previous generation. And they tend to be a bit, you know, lower price than the current version.
Even right now, even, I don't know, four years after the new Pro Zooms? I think it's 4 years. You can still get, you know, instead of the 24-70 that's out now, you can get the 28-70 that was out before that. And that's still a very, very good lens. Most people will not be able to tell the difference in using it. Most people won't be able to tell the difference in the pictures that come out of it. And it will be significantly cheaper. And the same thing goes for the older 70-200. The same thing goes for the 17-35 that, you know, that people got rid of to get the 14-24. And there are plenty of places that have good used gear, and you'll be able to save some money on it. And those lenses are all 2.8, so you're still getting the speed advantage that the newer lenses have, and you're not paying as much.
Because at the end of the day, with low light stuff, there's there really isn't much you can do, technically speaking. There is really a limit. Things to watch out for, things you can do to compensate for the low shutter speed, or trying to use low ISO because there's too much high ISO if you use just too much noise when you use too high of an ISO. And it does unfortunately come down to your equipment, and the only way around it really is to rob a bank. No?
Yes, in the long term, not, you know, not
you're
when
out there,
you're
you just
that's, I think that's the key takeaway to this podcast, is that if you're going to rob a bank, you have to rob it before the game, not when you get to the game and realize that it's too dark.
Or like, how about like borrowing money from your parents? Is that not really one of the things as well? No?
It depends on the kind of relationship that you have with your parents.
You're right.
I'm wondering, have we offended anybody's religion with our talk about robbing
banks? No, robbing banks is a multi-religion thing. Any religion can rob a bank. It's fine.
Okay, I was just concerned.
It does happen sometimes. But that really is for Masterclass. It's I'm sorry, we've actually kept it quite short because we've kind of gone overboard for the past the previous podcast. If you've got any other type of tips that you can possibly even tell us, because, you know, we're not all knowing demigods like Matt claims that he is. And because we are, in a way, we are coming...
Now you've just blasphemed.
What?
Now you've just blasphemed.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. Sorry, Jesus or Allah or whatever I have to apologize to now. I feel really bad now. Because we're coming from a very kind of privileged privileged situation, in that our equipment really is top of the line, and because we do this as a job and we do need good equipment. But I'm sure there are other ways that you do combat dark, you know, desperate situations. If you do know, and if you want to share it with the rest of us, please, you know, let us know on our Flickr groups or just post a comment on the podcast page.
Yeah, and if you have a question that we haven't adequately addressed with regards to low light, then ask it in there and we'll make sure to answer it.
And it's 22 minutes, which is good. So, David, I think we've done a very good job, so you should throw us a bone. Okay, and that is the end of Masterclass.
Big Lens Fast Shutter, you win.
You Win is part of the show where you, the listeners, participate in a monthly themed competition. The top three photos will be presented on our site. And Matt came up with his idea that we should kind of do, you know, me versus Matt. So we'll have, like, you know, we'll submit each a picture for the month, and you, the listeners, get to critique it. I think it's a crappy idea. Crappy? Assy idea, I guess. So if you got some inputs, like if you got an opinion on this matter, please let us know. I guess you can just write on the podcast thread or post. And yeah, let us know if Rue versus Matt is a good thing to do.
And yeah, keep in mind that Rue is very, very competitive, and his ego, I don't know if it could survive it. So keep that in mind when you're making your comments.
I might commit suicide if I lose in the first month, but that's up to you. You know, if you want to see me die, then I guess we can actually do this thing. Wow, it's a terrible thing to do. So we've kind of made UWin a little bit more interactive, and what it is that we're going to, Matt and I, we are going to be giving our top three, and at the end we will have a combined list of 3, 2, and 1. So Matt will present the third, and I'll present the third one as well, second, blah, 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 up to the first one. So Matt, which one is your third? Oh, by the way, if you want to kind of do this interactively, I guess, you can actually go into the Flickr group thread for this month competition, and you can kind of like look through photos.
And yes, we'll have the Matt. Link. We'll have the link on the podcast post as well, so you can just click on it.
Yeah. But if you're out somewhere, you know, doing what you shouldn't probably be doing right now, then I guess you just kind of have to imagine, you know, use your head.
Yeah, this isn't one of those podcasts where you can like mow the lawn while you're listening to it. We need your full attention.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we can't mow the lawn. Can't. You can clean dishes though. Can't mow the lawn. All right, listen. Number three, Matt.
Streetball by David A.R. That is my number three.
Which one's that one?
Little kid kicking a soccer ball down a cobblestone street.
Okay.
Yeah, I think this is a really nice, nicely composed picture. I think it's a nice moment, and I like the tones of the street versus the tones of the wall behind him. And I like there's a little bit of motion blur. Yeah, I like this picture.
Okay. My number three is number three by this guy who is called Kevin Dean. I have no idea where he's from. He's from probably somewhere around, not around here, but probably somewhere around some other place. It's the guy dunking the ball about to in a Midnight Madness dunk contest. I don't know where this is. UCR? University of something something?
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know where it is, but in any case, I just thought that the way he shot it, hopefully, even if this is like kind of a one luck type of shot, I just think it's a really, really dramatic shot. I love everything about it. I love the fact that you can actually see a bit of the team in on the left-hand side, but the rest is very, very dark, and you can really just concentrate your eyes on the guy going for the dunk, and I think it's great.
Yeah, I like this picture a lot. Also, the funny thing is I looked at his stream a little bit, and he has one with cheerleaders in the same lighting that I liked a lot better than I like this shot. So I didn't pick
because you like basketball guys and cheerleaders.
I just thought the other picture, he had all the cheerleaders up in the air at the same time. I just thought it was a better picture than this one. I think this would have been, this was very close. I think that if he would have had some light on the guys, you know, on the front of him, rather than just relying on the light from behind, that it would have been a lot better picture.
That's called nitpicking.
Yeah. It's my vote.
Number two, Matt.
Number two is the Snow Cross by O Billow Down.
Wow, we're really splitting, say, huh? Yeah. Which one? Snow Cross?
Snow Cross. It's the guy on the snowmobile jumping and the carnival Ferris wheels in the background.
Ah, yeah.
I really like this picture a lot. I think it's, you know, it's great timing, and it was a great idea to get that. I like the separation between the subject. I guess it's kind of like hazy, and the exhaust from the snowmobile is kind of you know, washing out the Ferris wheel a little bit. But yeah, I like this picture a lot.
I thought about it for a split second, but for some reason, the dude who was like wearing a security guy thing in the lower right really threw me off.
Yeah, fair enough.
I know, sorry. My number two is by Van Lim, which is the, I think it's a water polo picture. It's a bit, it kind of goes into like the really gray zone of whether or not this is actually a sports picture or not, because you don't really see anything rather than only just the silhouette of the hands and head and everything. There's no ball, there's no nothing, but you can only see the net and that's it. I kind of didn't want to put it in, but at the same time, it kind of hits me somewhere that I really kind of like these kind of very ambiguous sports photos, and I just kind of had to put it in because it's so beautifully just done, and I like to have actually seen something a bit more sportish about it, but just like the sheer beauty of it, I just kind of had to put it there in number two.
Yeah, well, I liked it as well, and I made it my number one.
Really?
I don't care that you can't tell what sport. Before I looked at the what set it was in on her page, I thought it was just straight up swimming. Mm. I didn't realize that it was water polo, but I really like the idea. I like the execution. I like it. That water polo pictures, a lot of them end up being very literal, and I really like how the player is completely silhouetted. I love the spray and how there's different colors caught up in the spray. I like that the water is a different color. You know, on the surface is a different color than the water that's spraying up. I love this picture.
The only one we agreed was that one. Because my number one is the one we debated off podcast, off recording. Is this dude, it's called Riku Salo at Nivavara. I think this is Finnish. I'm not Finnish, so I can't. I'm sure I'm saying it wrong. But it's this dude with a bike, and he is being shot from below, and you can see the forest and the guy. The more I see it, I don't know if this is real or not, because it's so, in a way, perfectly done and perfectly executed that Matt and I, we did discuss about this, and we thought it was photoshopped.
The way that the light, you know, and I could be wrong, and I don't want to cast aspersions on whether or not this is the kind of person that would make a picture like that, or, you know, represent that it was real or not, and it doesn't seem like he's doing that one way or the other, but it just, I don't know, the way the light is, it doesn't look like it's real. But I do agree that it's a great, the composition is great and the idea was great, but the way the flash looks on it, aside from it being hard to tell whether it's real or not, it's also, that should have been gelled so that it you know, didn't look so white.
So wait, if we actually find out this is real, would you put this as number one?
No.
Really?
It would be second or third.
Wow. All right, you know what? I'm actually cool with Van's, the water polo one being number one. I'm cool with that.
Yeah.
I'm not too crazy about your number three. I'd rather actually have the other one, you know.
Snowcross.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then maybe we can actually have the my first second. Because I just don't, because the thing is, like, if it is kind of faked, you know, like if you actually kind of photoshopped into it, then obviously it will be, you know, out of here. But I'm just kind of, you know, giving the benefit of the doubt here for this.
Okay.
Yeah? So we're set?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I'm being very giving today. I've actually given up on my third. See, I can be giving sometimes, you know. So that's it. That's the one, two, and three. And next month, Matt, you probably should say it then, because it's a bit of a special one, right?
Coming up in episode 10, we have a great prize for our winner. The competition is going to be frozen action. So no blur, no panning, no motion of any kind. And we have a bag that has been generously donated by Kurt Rogers and Think Tank. So get your entries in for Frozen Action, our episode 10, you win.
To participate, go to our Flickr group, Big Lens Fast Shutter, and post your picture on the themed competition topic. If you don't know how to post it, it should be written there how to do it. It's not very difficult. Well, it's not really. And yeah, that will be it for you win.
Big Lens Fast Shutter, Trading Ground. The idea is we all learn little something.
You ask for it, you get it. Ryu and I will rip your photos into smithereens. Hold on to your headphones. Here comes the pain.
As usual, wonderful introduction by Matt. No, I asked him to do these things, so if you don't like it, that's tough. Because, you know, obviously I'm the most important person on this podcast. Yeah,
and I'm third, by second. The way.
We kind of like made our rankings, yeah. You know, our top three rankings of who's the most important person on this podcast. We're going to start because we don't want to get this to be too long and suffer the same fate we had the last podcast. So, Matt, we've got, if you want to actually look through with us, just go to the October Training Ground thread topic thing on Big Lens Fast Shutter and on Flickr, and you should be able to actually see what we're talking about. So, the first one by CCPFO. Not good, both of them, but I understand what he's trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems like, first of all, he's chosen a bad position because you're just never going to be able to do anything with those, with the backs of the bleachers. So you need to be, on the other side of the field. Doesn't really matter what else is going on. You need to not be shooting from that position.
I shoot a lot of football, so I know if you want to have two guys kind of doing something against each other, you kind of have to find a better action shot than this sliding tackle, something, someone, you know, grimacing more, like has to be more than this. This is kind of like a stock thing that you can shoot anytime, anywhere. So choose a different type of action or wait for another action to happen. Do better next time. So this should be in the bin. Speaking of bin, it's Ben CK.
Yeah, I can't really, the first one, I can't tell what's going on. I mean, obviously somebody's laying down and the other person's maybe helping him up or whatever, but that's not good enough on its own, unless it was on a Nike, you know, something for Nike. I do like the second one a little bit. It's not a good picture, but I like that he went for it. It would have been better if the player in the foreground was looking to the side, preferably the other direction, but either direction would have been fine. Just having him watching the pitcher is not enough. There's not enough tension between the pitcher and the base runner. But again, I do want to reward Ben because he went for it on this. Like, this isn't a normal kind of picture that people shooting sports action would get. They would focus on the pitcher alone, or the pitcher would be in focus and the runner would be out of focus. So I like what he's trying to do. It's just a matter of, you need to sit on that a little bit more and you'll get the runner breaking back towards the bag, or, you know, looking at home plate like he wants to steal or something like that. Keep doing that, but this isn't it.
Yeah. Agreed on both counts. The first picture, I don't know what the hell's going on. Doesn't tell say anything. It's crap. You should throw it away. I know what you want. What are you trying to do? But it's really, there's nothing going on at the end. The second,
and you have to, and just real quick, you have to shoot that first one because you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, that guy might lift up his head and have a crazy bloody nose or something like that. You have to do that. But when you get a picture like this, you have to know that's not it and get rid of it. Like, there's nothing, there's no value to this. You don't send it. You don't put it up.
Yeah.
Get rid of it.
The second one, the guy in the foreground, the runner has to be doing something interesting, standing, not interesting at all. Or something happening in the background, which is pitcher pitching, just doesn't really do it. The Taipan, we both agree he should be graduating from training ground. And if you're going to keep him participating, Mr. The Taipan, send us more interesting stuff, because I think you're very, very good at what you do. Agreed?
Yeah, this rodeo picture is great.
Fantastic. I love the hat and everything. Just great.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah. Car, not so much. But rodeo, great. probably better than Matt's, but I don't want to, you know, say bad stuff about Matt. He's very sensitive.
Wow.
SJH photo. We need more action on this. It's just kind of halfway, half-ass type of thing. We need to, like, peak action. The girl's already going down on the ground, kind of on the way down. Not really happening. What do you think?
Yeah, it would have been better, you know, like, I don't know, split second before, if she was at the peak of it, if the ball was just coming off of her hand, if she was doing something other than, you know, falling down and watching the ball go up. But, and then, you know, just from a post-processing point of view, it looks like, I don't know, highlights and shadows maybe in Photoshop or something like that, but it looks hollow. So yeah, I'm not into the look of it.
Background is a bit too much. There's too much going on in the background as well.
Yeah.
It doesn't really work with the whole thing. Effective pool.
Yeah, I mean, this looks like somebody just starting out.
Yeah.
You know, like happy that they were shooting with the light and, you know, got the eyes or whatever, and that's fine. But you need to look at this picture as a standalone picture and then say what's interesting about this other than the fact that you made it. Like, if you saw somebody else, if you saw this picture in the paper or something like that, what would you say about it? And I would say, you know, it's a runner making a cut. There's nothing, there's no tension. There's nothing, you know, there's nothing going on here. So, you know, if it's a big deal for you to be able to shoot, you know, a major college team, then you need to make the most of it, and just having, you know, like stock running back pictures or whatever.
It's kind of like a
not taking advantage
masturbation photo, you know, like you're kind of happy that you've kind of done it. Like, that's great, you know? So good. Tap yourself in the back and move on and give us something more interesting. Both Dragon Ball Racing, same thing as well. You got the shot, great. You cropped it, fantastic. Okay, that's it. You know, there's nothing more to it. No action, nothing more violent.
Yeah, shooting a boat picture like that is a great time to really go extreme with your panning. So, drop the shutter way down and get the motion and whatever. Here, we've talked about this before. You've kind of fallen in between where it's not frozen, but it's not blurred enough to really show the power and the movement of all these people who are paddling at the same time.
And he's probably like, gosh, he's shooting from the beach as well. So it's very, very far. He cropped it a lot. Effective pool. I know I'm against cropping, but try not to crop too much because then it kind of cheapens your image. I mean, this is quite extreme cropping as well for both end. Think about what the focal length of your lens is and try to actually work towards your advantage, not towards your disadvantage. Okay, move on. T big head bicycle stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that the first one there was probably a second where this was a picture. If he was, you know, maybe I know that these guys like jump on these bikes in crazy ways. But it's not enough. Like the way his leg is would have been great if both legs, if you could see both feet, you know, flying through the air to get on the bike or to, you know, whatever. But it's just off, you know, to the point where it's not interesting. It's just, you know, a guy jumping on a bike. To make a picture like this, you have to show what he's going through to get on that bike or how tired he is or how much he's struggling or something like that. This doesn't really show that very well.
And there's no angle to it as well. It's just kind of flat, you know? There's just, you know, nothing really dramatic about it. And like Matt said, if you actually do want to just, you know, show us that he's getting on these bikes in a really cool way, then show it. This doesn't show at all. Second one, whatever. It's, you know.
Yeah, I've shot a lot of cycling, and I can say that, first of all, you know, getting people coming through a turn is a dime a dozen kind of shot. It happens, especially in city races where they're doing a circuit and they, you know, they might come by 7 or 8 times. Choose where you're shooting from better. If there's going to be fans in the background, make sure there's a lot of fans and they're doing something. And if not, then make sure there's nothing in the background. This has one, you know, one or two people that you can see on one side and then a white truck on the other side. That's not helping.
Yeah, not good. Carlina, he says, I think it's a he. Non-action sports shots. Hey, it doesn't really have to be action, be a sports shot. I like the first one. I actually really, really do.
Yeah, so the question that he asks is, does the fence add or detract? I think the fence is fine. You know, I shoot from, when I shoot high school games, sometimes the only place that you can shoot from is behind the fence. And so you're either hoping, you know, you're pressing your lens up all the way so that you're, you know, not getting the fence at all, or you're trying to do something like this. I have no problem with this at all. I don't think it was exactly the right moment, but I do like the idea of going for, you know, because you can sit back there and shoot the pitcher 75 times as she's pitching, but this is good. You know, it's not perfect, but it's a good idea. I like the execution. Try it out. Try and get different moments from the same composition. That would be my
advice. I think it's just a really, I really liked it. It's a cool picture. I don't like the girl in the back that much, this third girl on the right.
Yeah.
I like the black girl on the left and the white girl in the front. I guess it gives a good contrast as well. So maybe you could have actually recomposed it a bit more. So you actually shift a bit more to the left and get rid of the girl, the white girl in the back, the third one, you know?
Yeah, you have to, this does kind of reek of not considering everything that was in the frame at a time. And that's something that we've talked about before. Everything that's in the frame needs to be in the frame, and everything that's not relevant to the picture, you need to figure out a way to get it out. And it's not, you know, this isn't a slam on you, because a lot of people do this, and I've done it, and everybody's done it. Maybe not Ryu, because he's perfect. But if something isn't adding to the picture, move, recompose, figure out a way to get it out of the picture, because that girl in the outfield is not helping, and not helping is hurting. Because
he's not as cool as the other two girls, and yeah, you can always Photoshop it. Okay, second one, I don't really care. Well, it could be in a bin. It's not really interesting. It should be a lot closer, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. Or you know, the crop it. Yeah. You know, it does look like it's already cropped, but it would be more interesting if everybody, you know, if all the picture was all these different faces with the baseball hats and some with the sunglasses on, it would have been okay, but not from here. There's probably nothing
it's too
that
far.
You could do from here.
You have to get closer. I mean, like, you know, like Matt said, that you get more access to players on high school games. Get closer. Use your feet, not your zoom.
Yeah, it's late. I mean, if I was somewhere and I saw this, something like this happening, I would, you couldn't even time how fast it would take me to get whatever lens I had on off and get my 14 to 24 on and lay down in the dirt underneath these guys. It would be like, that would be like a cartoon. You know, this is a moment that you can't get in a pro game. No pro dugouts look like this, except on the last out of the World Series or something like
what?
That. So,
no, the American Series, not the World Series. You crazy?
As long as the trophy says World Series on it, that's what we're going to call it. I don't care about.
All right.
Take advantage. You're not taking advantage of this. This is a picture you could get anywhere, and it looks like you have pretty good access here. So take advantage of it.
Fred. I like the first one.
The first one.
Yeah.
Full dive.
Yeah. But it's kind of like it still feels like you're happy to kind of like get these action. Think about angles. Think about a bit blurring the background more if you can, or shooting from an angle that you actually don't have that much to me distracting things going on.
It looks like you could have moved you know, a few steps over and gotten that that cherry sign out of the way. You want to do that.
Second picture, kind of the same thing. It's good you can actually freeze action, but that's not all about sports photography. Think about it, making it a bit more interesting than this. Girls with skirts, you know?
And this should be, I mean, this would have been not a good picture, but it would have been better. You need to get lower. I sit or kneel or something like that.
It's a bit higher on this one.
Yeah, you want to be, you want your lens to be straight on with her head, basically. It would have made this picture a little bit more interesting, and you would have gotten a little bit more of her pained kind of expression going down to get that ball. Don't stand. I mean, and you know, I don't know who's teaching these people or whatever, but I've been seeing, like, I didn't shoot this weekend, so I watched college football on Saturday and pro football yesterday, and there's a lot of people standing, you know, monopods fully extended and whatever, and don't do that.
Sit.
It's so lazy, and you get worse pictures, and you look like an idiot. Kneel, sit on a stool, do something, but you need that low angle. I'm not out there messing up my back and crushing my knees for 3 or 4 hours at a time because I like to. I do it because it gets better pictures. So don't stand. It's not good. Do not stand when you're shooting field sports like that.
Don't do it. Right. To go to Yanis Kurtoglu, Turkish or Greek?
Probably Greek.
Okay. I know what you wanted to do, but I don't see his feet. I just need a bit more context, whether or not it's actually close to the goal. It's kind of like better luck next time, huh?
It was, you know, good timing.
Yeah.
But the composition was off, and maybe the choice of lens was off as well. But I mean, it's good. I'm happy just to get a frozen image picture. This is better than that.
Because I think you try to do something else, you know, on this one.
Yeah, it needs to be better than it is. I like the exposure. I like the, you know, the sweat flying off his glove and everything, and that's good. But think about being more careful about the exposure about the composition next time.
Yeah. Hmm. Franco.
Yeah, these are interesting because it's not the kind of thing that you see all the time. I think the first one is definitely stronger because the guy's totally horizontal to the ground. But I don't think the net is necessarily helping, at least not having it in the foreground. I think this should be, you should be shooting under the net or from the side or from the top or something like that to get a different angle. You're turning a really interesting thing into volleyball pictures. And, you know, that's... Take advantage that you're shooting... Like, I've never... I don't know if you've ever shot this, Rio, but I've never shot it. So what I would want to do is show that this is different than volleyball. Yeah, the net's there, and yes, it's going to be in pictures, but don't make it so that these are volleyball pictures because this is involved.
I think he's just quite happy to have that impact thing going on because both shots are that and through the net. But like Matt said, it's not really interesting to actually have all these net things unless it kind of adds to the picture, and it doesn't. It kind of really, you know, takes out a lot.
Yeah, if the ball is hitting off of the top of the net, or if the player got hung up in the net or something like that, then that would be good. Otherwise, you know, get the athleticism and don't let the net be distracting from that. I really don't mind the first picture. You know, if the other one had been something without the net, I think that this one would have been better. But I think looking at the net in two pictures in a row, you know, probably takes away from it a little bit. But
no, it's a shame because there's something in, like, the sports looks really, really interesting, but the picture really not up to par. I mean, you really have to think about a bit more what works and what doesn't work. And if you can actually get these shots to be, you know, frozen like that, you are kind of past that. So think about it, different angles. This is not a good angle to shoot from. If you want to get higher up, bring a ladder and shoot from there. You know, you have to get a bit more.
Or sit down in the sand next to the post where the net's attached to, and shoot wide. I don't know. Just picturing it right now, if you were 3 feet away from this guy in the sand shooting this, this would have been a really very, very cool picture. Mm.
Okay, to the Kiv, kind of same thing. Everybody bit too happy these days about getting things in frame. First one's more interesting because you're quite low on the ground as well. Second one, it's a throwaway. I'm glad you actually got this, but the first one, you just want to see a bit more. I mean, I think you've got access. It looks like if you can get that close, you know, to the action.
Yeah, this looks pretty close.
Yeah.
The only thing, the first one, that this would be good for is if the school paper was doing a feature on the guy who was playing defense, then it would be good. But as a sports picture, cutting that guy off on the side and at an awkward place, like right at his ankle, is not good. And then his hands also. So you need to be a little bit more careful composition wise there?
Ben Cullen.
Yeah, I like this. I like that he did it. I like that he pulled it off. I would have liked a 15th or something like that. Your keeper rate is going to go down, but it would have been more blurred. But I applause for going for it. Contrast what Ben is doing here with all that other stuff where people are just happy to get frozen in focus action or whatever, and Ben's going for it here. So that's good. What's not good is 160th on a race car is going to be good, but 160th on a human running is going to give you the blur like there is here, which isn't bad. But believe me, this picture would be much, much more interesting at 115th or a 10th or something like that.
I think you probably could have actually waited a bit more so you actually get the guides much more in the frame, because this is obviously cropped a lot. It's shot from very, very far. I would have actually waited. I mean, it's one of those things that you're not going to always get what you want. So, like I've actually said in my post, the blog post a couple weeks before, you really have to actually plan your shots, and you have to, like, if you know the sports very well, you kind of just have to, you know, place your bets on the position and the time you can actually get that perfect shot, and you have to be very patient with it. Don't go for everything, and I'm glad you're actually doing the panning thing, but now try to actually find out where you can actually get the best panning shot, and you just have to leave the other, you know, like the guy holding out the other guy with his hand and, you know, with the ball and running. That's going to be by chance. So
stick with it. You'll miss a lot, you know, and especially if you drop it down. But now that you've kind of got it between your teeth, now, you know, bite it.
Tear it apart. Base Whore Honda. Your first one, Matt and I, we talked about it before the show, and it's fantastic. It's a
this is a good
shot.
Picture. And I've shot in the NASCAR pits before, and it's hard to get good pictures in there because there's a lot going on. There's a lot in your way. They sell access to fans, so you have fans in your way. So to get a picture that's framed this well with the number in the top left and the tire in the lower part of it, and then the guy calling out for the other tire, that's good stuff.
Great. And I like the fact that there's a tire in the foreground as well. Makes it really, really good. Second one's a bit crappy.
this is no good. This goes back to what we were talking about a couple times ago, where where it was the car, the tire going over a curb or something like that. This is what that is. So this is like, this is the kind of picture that you would take with your camera phone just to show other people, like, oh, look what this kid wrote on his, on his back pad. This is not a picture. You don't have the ball. You have the guy's back. Even the guy who's falling down, like the most dramatic picture is the number 7, going down or something like that. But that's not in focus and you can't see very much of him. This is not a picture. Somebody having eye black on or somebody having a forearm pad that something's written on does not make it a picture. This is a throwaway all the way. Unless you can figure out how to get the back pad in a picture that's already a picture, this isn't going to save you, and it hasn't. This is not a picture.
I mean, if you actually just wanted to do the whole back pad thing, I'm sure you actually knew. I kind of have a feeling he actually knew that he actually had this back pad. So maybe you could have actually chosen a different time to shoot just him in a back pad. Would actually have been a much more interesting picture.
Him watching, shooting it wide right up next to him, with him watching while the other, if the defense was on the field and he was watching it from the sideline, then, but that's already a picture and this is adding to it. But just getting that in focus and just having the letters on there is not enough.
It's a boo-boo. Throw it away.
And if you're obviously he knows what he's doing. You don't get that first picture by not knowing what you're doing. So, look at your own two pictures and figure out what's going on there. The first one is very good. The second one sucks more like the first one. And I don't want to see any more like that second one. That's not even going for it. That's not even trying to do something original. That's just a bad picture.
Come on. No, he was going for something original. It's just badly executed.
Nah.
Wow, really? Wow, that's really angry today.
Nothing good there.
Ken, he's trying now. I can see that he's trying.
Yeah, Ken is getting better. I like it.
First one is, I like the first one much better than the second one.
Yeah. The second one is, you know, it's just, even if the feet were in there, it still wouldn't have been very interesting. The guy's already four steps into the end zone. There's nobody trying to tackle him. It's before the celebration. Like, number 55 is already putting his hands up or whatever, but that's not enough to make it a picture. But the first one, you know, for the stuff that Ken has been putting in there, the first one is good. I like the that he got the fingers pulling the mask down. That's not something that you see all the time. So it's better, definitely better stuff.
Ken, we don't need titles. That's one thing you should not learn how to do, is you should actually use your time wisely in taking pictures, not thinking of what the title should be. The picture should speak for itself, and that's it. You shouldn't need anything. It should be, when you see the picture, like, oh yeah, the dude's he's got the finger on the face mag. Oh, that's cool. Why do you need the title for that? You don't need it. Throw it away, okay? Don't do that kind of stuff. It's like putting your stats on the what camera you used and what focal length and whatnot. I mean, who cares? No one cares. So you're in the right path. Take more like the first one. If you want to do the second one, make sure you get the feet. That's too weirdly cut. We can't do that. And you need to have other people kind of just doing other things. He needs to be like breaking tackles and going into the end zone, you know, something more. He just kind of like walked in, looks like, you know, it's not really interesting.
Even if there was a guy that had tried to tackle him and missed, but that guy was on the ground and looking up at, you know, his failure costing his team six points or something, then, you know, that's better. But there's not enough. No. Not enough on this one.
And last but not least, Satch, no. It's, I don't care what it is. It's a no-no, because I don't think the guy in the foreground, his face is in focus. You know, I think it's focused on the guy behind, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, a no-no.
And the ball. The ball's in focus, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, the cutting the fingers off like that is no good, and, you know, the way that the other guy is cut off is no good. Yeah, it's a little bit more attention to detail on this and a little bit more practice focusing, for sure. Because, you know, it's close and everything, but, you know, not good enough. You need to be more careful.
You know, we don't hate you, Satch, but we hate this picture. So throw it away and start over again. That's it. Okay. So that's it for all the hate and love for all your photos. And with that, we finally end this ninth episode of Big Lens Fast Shutter, the last single-digit episode. Special thanks to Boutsman, a.k.a. Arvin Batista, for the eye-catching icons, and has been promoted, David Whitaker, for wonderful sound engineering things he does with our voice and everything else. To check out their info, as well as ours, please check out BigLensFastShutter.com. See you next month.
Thanks for listening. Visit the website at BigLensFastShutter.com. See you all next month for another episode.